Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
A lot of people ask me, why do I go out to California and look at what's going on there as they address any number of social issues? Because it happens there first in many respects, and it's a living experiment by which to judge whether or not the measures that are put in place and implemented are meaningful, work operationally, and lead to good outcomes. Because as we see early signs of a very troubling situation here as it relates to the homeless population, you just need to drive by the interstate overpasses and the tents are mounting up. There are more today than there were 6 months ago. And you're seeing them more and more scattered throughout the city. So what works? What doesn't work? How do you go about doing it? Has some of the problems, for instance, in San Francisco been exaggerated? There was a recent article in a San Francisco publication called the City Journal entitled San Francisco Hostage to the Homeless: Failure to Enforce Basic Standards of Public Behavior Has Made One of America's Great Cities Increasingly Unlivable. In other words, you've heard me say this a lot, developing a culture of noncompliance and what it means. We are fortunate here today. We have Carl Tannenbaum, who's a retired police sergeant from the San Francisco Police Department, who saw it on the front line for a number of years and has an opinion about the kind of the cause and effect and what the challenges are there. Carl, welcome to the show.
Well, good afternoon, Noah. How are you?
Carl, I know you have a connection to New Orleans, and we appreciate same, and we appreciate you taking time today out of your busy schedule, even though you are retired and we are jealous because of he enjoys, folks, the views of the Sonoma County now in the Sonoma Valley. So we're very jealous about that as well.
Well, thanks for that. How are you doing?
Doing great. Carl,
good.
You had a chance to read Heather McDonald's extensive article. She actually went really almost undercover and stayed amongst the homeless population, interviewing them over a course of several days. Your thoughts?
A lot of thoughts. I'll start with, my predisposition. I'm a little bit critical of Heather McDonald and some of her positions. However, once I read the article and read it again, if you take out a lot of the florid prose and graphic writing, it was like a trip down memory lane for me, starting in 1981 when I was a rookie cop walking the beat in the Tenderloin. Everything that she wrote about what she saw and the conditions on the street were true then to a much lesser degree, but she kind of is spot on, and the same thing with her analysis of what contributes to the problem. So I think it was a very well-written article and pretty well-researched. I questioned some of the numbers, but again, nothing that's glaring enough to want to debunk.
One of the things that she made an observation about, which kind of struck me, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are, she said that actually having a place to live may be the least of the homeless concerns. Sounds a little counterintuitive, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but there's also another passage in the article where, you know, she quotes a lot of the homeless people, and even my experience was that, you know, and she does kind of she uses a metaphor, but basically, you know, the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. What I found in dealing with the homeless is something that she points out, is that there are a lot of people, and I think I might fall into the category if I ever found myself that way. I don't want to be sheltered. I don't want to be controlled. I don't want to be ordered around. So even if housing is available, do the homeless population, do they willingly participate? And if so, will they maintain some order and semblance of lawfulness once they're in subsidized housing? So I don't know. I kind of agree with it. That's not always the solution. You know, you have to have, what's the buzzword? You have to have buy-in. And I think that's where the challenges come from.
So, you know, in San Francisco, they've had any number of agencies that profess to be looking out for the best interests of this population. Obviously, some of the downstream effects. There's, you know, public urination, public defecation, syringes, trash, garbage, people living on other people's property, people living in public right-of-ways. Is there really a coordinated effort, or is this just so many disparate different agencies trying to address this and kind of the shotgun approach that they really don't have a strategic approach to this problem?
I think you hit the nail on the head. There are competing special interests, and you start with, you know, whatever the political will of the mayor is, and then we have, I believe it's 11 elected supervisors who represent 11 separate city districts. So each one of those supervisors is looking out for their own district and what's in their best interest. And then when it comes to, you know, enforcement or resources versus advocacy and, you know, constitutional rights, all of these things butt up against each other. And then you have multiple other agencies that are sort of falling over each other or fighting for funding, to where the homeless person is basically sort of left in the dust. That's a little bit of an overreach, but that's kind of what happened. So, yeah, too many special interests. And the term that I used even when I was working is there's just kind of a lack of political will.
So one of the issues that Heather McDonald brought up in her article was this drug trade. And in a particular area, she talks about how the Honduran community have kind of controlled that drug trade. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. Like I said, it was a trip down memory lane. You know, having walked the beat in the Tenderloin, and then about 10 years later, I was in the narcotics unit for 3 years. The South Central and South American community, and primarily the Hondurans, did and apparently do still control a lot of the drug trade there. So she was, again, spot on with that. And my position, even though I did a lot of enforcement, made a lot of arrests and worked in narcotics, I just feel like if we were to sort of somehow find, you know, because the enforcement has not worked, so do we find some sort of an alternative solution for people that are addicted? There are certain countries, Switzerland and Portugal being two, that have legalized hard drugs, and they control it. And it's proved to be a successful model. That doesn't mean it's going to translate to the United States or to San Francisco. But she, again, spot on with her observations of what's going on out there. Again, it sounds like it's been magnified and gotten a lot worse since I retired and since I was working in narcotics, but it is a problem, and she's nailed it.
But she asked the question why, and the impression she got that people were just reluctant to talk about enforcement on any number of different fronts, you know, where we've actually embraced this public behavior, and I forgot how she phrased it. Oh, she says that we have a society that's now has stopped enforcing bourgeois norms of behavior. Bourgeois actually meaning, I guess, middle class norms of behavior in our city. And this is what ultimately happens.
I read the article and I actually had to look up the word bourgeois. Yeah. And one definition said that it was sort of a negative connotation. Yeah, so the enforcement aspect of it, and I'm speaking to a sheriff who, you know, had a way bigger overview and responsibility than I did. But the reality is, as the line officer, whether it's narcotics enforcement, which, again, having done 3 years of it, to see so many cases kicked out, dropped by the DA for whatever evidentiary issues. But you know, I think a good example, like Heather offers, it's an article well-written in the sense that she points out all of these problems, and then she sort of has suggestions for solutions. But the enforcement aspect of it is not that difficult when you put yourself in the shoes of the officer that she quotes who encountered the homeless encampment. And they actually have special officers now whose primary duty is to deal with the homeless people. But if you think about what that officer has to deal with, you know, whether it's a homeless person or it's a little bit different, but still even a narcotics arrest, with the homeless person, and the officer gets there, let's say there's a crime, a what I call quality of life crime, and the officer takes some action. Well, if he issues a citation, number one, she points out in the article that the courts have started dismissing the citations on a whole. So the officer realizes whatever he does is going to be an exercise of futility. So he's sort of reluctant, and there's also health issues for him or her. But So let's say he takes the actions and issues a citation, and the citation were to turn into a warrant, and then he were to encounter the same person and arrest him. And you know the revolving door situation, that if he were to arrest the person, number one, he has to deal with the person's property. And there's no way around that because that's the law, and those are the rules that govern us. And even though you and I can tell what a shopping cart full of garbage is, it still is that person's property. So you have to somehow manage that. And then you're talking about the whole process of arrest and booking and detention in court. And so the officers, the line officers, are like starting to question, like, why am I doing this, especially when the person is out? And here's the irony. The person on the street who's digging through the dumpster for food, when they go to jail, what have we done? Well, yeah, we've taken the problem off the street. We've given them shelter, and we've given them food, and we've provided for them. So is this the model that we want to do? And if so, my response is we just need to know that. We need to know that this is what we're going to do. The courts need to say we have the teeth to enforce these laws. However, and again, I don't know how the situation was for you during your term, but up here we've had...
Well, I think what you're saying, though, is everyone is saying the same. You need to be consistent, and you need to be persistent in whatever strategy that you utilize or deploy in order to deal with this situation and maybe right. Come to the realization. And what I found in reading through all of these articles, and one thing I wanted to hear from you first was, it seems a lot of times when I read it, it seems to be exaggerated. But when I talked to you yesterday, you said, probably not. It's probably a fair, accurate depiction of what is actually going on in San Francisco and other cities in California.
Yes.
And so, you know, you begin to wonder, you know, what's the ultimate end game here in the manner in which they address? And when you have so many disparate competing special interests, as you pointed out, trying to address the same thing from different perspectives, none of whom can honestly say that they've actually made life better for these folks that are actually living on the street. And right. that's what I find just completely and totally incredulous.
I couldn't agree more. And like I said, I think the problem is because there's not the competing special interest. And then even in the judicial system, like I was starting to allude to, the city and county of San Francisco has been fined repeatedly for jail overcrowding. They've been forced to deal with that. So if we were to, let's say we were to, in a perfect world, start to do consistent enforcement, it would have to be across the board. So once the person is arrested and incarcerated, the federal oversight committee or somebody would have to say, okay, then we have to find a place to keep these people incarcerated, because whatever we're doing, the soft touch on the street, and you're right, it's not working. It pains me to admit that it's not working, because it's my city and I love it. But it's, there's too much. I'm a very bleeding heart liberal, and yet I see that all this compassion and all this caring has not, the problem's gotten worse in my lifetime. So yeah. It's obviously not working. And, you know, who does get to finally, you know, drop the hammer on this is the way we're going to do it? And again, if you have the mayor and 11 supervisors and all the other special interest groups on the same page, I think you would see more effective enforcement.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an opportunity for us, as I expressed to you yesterday on the phone. I see the beginning and the early signs of us moving in a direction of having a problem. And same situation as we're focusing on providing housing. And more, the more reading I do, the more investigation I do. I agree with Heather on this. That may be the least of the challenges that they face. And it's more going to be mental illness, the addictive disorder, and things of that nature that have to be dealt with first.
Exactly, exactly. And again, she did a really good job of pointing out those two major problems of the people on the streets is the drugs and the mental health issues. And of course, that's not to say that everybody has that problem. Some people genuinely end up on the streets by bad luck and misfortune. But a lot of the people that did end up there have underlying diagnosis. And so, again, to treat those, and we all know how much mental health services, in spite of the fact that there's a lot in San Francisco, they're still they can't, I can't imagine they can address more than a small percentage of what needs to be done there.
Yeah. Well, Carl Tannenbaum, thank you so much for spending time with us this morning. I just wanted to make sure that I was not misreading or overstating this situation out there. And it's good to hear from a frontline officer that saw it real time, real life, up front and center. And we appreciate your insight.
No, I appreciate the opportunity to express myself. Thank you very much.
All righty. That's Carl Tannenbaum, former police sergeant with the San Francisco Police Department, having worked through those challenges day in and day out on the streets of San Francisco. We want to hear from you. 260-1870 or text 870-870. We'll be right back. This is Newell on WWL. We're back. We're talking about the homeless situation. And are you concerned? We are heading in the direction of San Francisco relative to the homeless situation on our Blue Runner opinion poll, and 67% of the respondents say yes. And that's why I keep talking about this, folks, is that I'm not hearing from the city administration and leaders as to how they're going to adequately address this issue. What I am seeing is a lot more tents showing up in different areas of the city. And I've run across some folks, and we talk about it all the time, where they're seeing them over here, they're seeing them over there, they're seeing them along the railroad beds across the city, under the interstates. The other day, I'm going home from work, and homeless person pulls down his pants and defecates right on the sidewalk. I'm sitting at the stoplight right there by the train station. That's not good. That's not what you want to see in your city. That's what they see in San Francisco. In fact, 80 calls a day come in to have them come and clean up human feces off of the sidewalks in San Francisco or people's front door stoops in San Francisco. And what they've done by creating an environment there where one cannot talk about these issues without being basically verbally assaulted for trying to criminalize homelessness and trying to make you feel bad about even talking about this issue. And if you suggest that some of the folks out there, they don't want to move to a shelter, they don't want to follow rules, they don't want to have guidelines, they want to be free to do whatever they want to do, that you are the problem, and they don't believe that that's actually the case. But all of the evidence that is revealed daily and just talking to them, and it's what Heather McDonald did. She went basically undercover and started talking to all of the homeless people. And she says that the combination of maximal tolerance for antisocial behavior on the one hand and free services and food on the other acts as a magnet. She talks to Jeff, the 50-year-old wino and drug addict, and he says San Francisco's the place to go if you live on the streets. There are more resources, showers, yeah, and housing. When she talked to 31-year-old Rose, who was camped out northeast of the city, and she has a long criminal record, she said she came to San Francisco for the benefits, including Vivitrol, to dull the effect of all the opiates that she's taken every day. And she says, woozily standing outside of a huge green tent and pink bike at Golden Gate and Hyde, surrounded by the Hondurans who are, in fact, engaged in selling all of the drugs. And all of this has gone on wide out in the open. All of these advocates, and you heard from this officer who talked about competing special interests and these advocate groups coming at this in multiple different directions, not coordinated, not consistent, not persistent. They all fall back, as Heather McDonald points out in her article, that service resistance is a lie. That's not true. They don't want they want the services, but when you talk to them, that's not what they want. Yeah, they like the free hypodermic needles. they like the fact that you give them vitamin C so they can dump their heroin or whatever other drug they're shooting mixed with the vitamin C while they try to find a vein in order to shoot themselves up. They like that. They like, you know, the free hypodermic needle that you give them. They like the safe injection centers that they report to in order to shoot up. And for San Francisco, when you add all of this up, they have an annual tab of $380 million that they spend trying to address this issue. If you divide that by the census that they do biannually in San Francisco, by the number of homeless people there, that equates to $47,500 a year per homeless person. Now, let's say she's off, or whoever is, actually, that's reported by the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing. And let's say that number's off by 20%. That's still a huge number. $30,000+ a year, that's more than a lot of people in this city actually make. So why not look at a upfront science project gone on live to try and figure out how we are going to address this issue? Let's go to line one, talk to Tom in Houma. What say you, Tom?
You know, every time y'all bring this up, I always say that there should be just a designated camping area outside of eyeshot of the city. I don't really see how there's a solution outside of that. Otherwise, you know, maybe
what parish you think is going to welcome that outside of the city? I know Jefferson Parish is not.
Well, the city would have. I'm just saying the city would have to find some place on there on its outskirts where it would have to do it. I don't know. I don't want to sit here and tell you where, but I'm going to tell you it has to be somewhere. Otherwise, we could bring in magicians and just maybe make these people disappear. I don't know what else to tell you.
So, I mean, but do you really think we're helping these people by giving them syringes and injection sites and vitamin C?
That's
liquid?
A really bad idea. You're enabling a drug user. Yes, they can die if they come in down off of it or whatever, but, you know, ultimately, you know, honestly, I really feel like everybody should be free to do as they please with their body. But that being said, though, I don't think that the state needs to be giving away this stuff. And that's another good question. How did we go from having a drug war, locking people up and, you know, constantly, and now all of a sudden we're giving drugs away? This country just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, well, you know, what's going on across the country is we're trying to decriminalize a number of things. If you listen to the squad, we're over-incarcerating, over-criminalization. So now, in fact, there's a recent report out by the FBI that low-level crimes are plummeting, and the experts, you know, are confused about this. But we've made things, we've moved them from felonies to misdemeanors, but we're not doing any misdemeanor enforcement. And that's the whole issue, and it's the byline here for this article. Failure to enforce basic standards of public behavior has made, and it's one of my favorite cities, San Francisco, made one of America's great cities increasingly unlivable. And I was just kind of curious because I wanted to find out whether or not all of this is being exaggerated. And that's why we reached out to Carl Tannenbaum. Actually, my predecessor, Garland Robinette, had him on the show any number of times. So we reached out, and he was willing to come on and say, no, it's not exaggerated. It is exactly what everybody is saying it is. And if you don't deal with this before it becomes a huge problem, I don't know that you're ever going to get out of that problem. And that's the point that I'm trying to make, is that we need some forward-leaning leadership at the city level right now to address this, because I see more and more tents lining up under the overpass. Thank you so much, Tom. Appreciate the call. Got to get to a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back on the Blue Runner Gumbo Opinion Poll. Are you concerned we are heading in the direction of San Francisco relative to the homeless situation? 70% of the respondents say yes. I'm in that number with you. A good indication of that, these are not folks that don't have some means. One of the individuals that Heather McDonald interviewed while out on the street is a VA recipient, and he gets $1,100 a month in VA benefits, and obviously is eligible for VA loans. And when asked, why do you not avail yourself and take these benefits and go someplace that's cheaper and you can get housing and everything else with the benefits that you receive, his response was, because I love this place. San Francisco is an international, tolerant, peace-loving community that is often imitated but never duplicated. He says that he appreciates that leeway given him in his lifestyle. He goes, if I lay down like this in Fremont, which is a city across East Bay, basically what he's saying is they're not going to tolerate it over there. They're going to move me along. They're not going to let me set up my tent and do whatever I want. And I'm able to go to, I guess, the local Western Union store and get my VA check and live out here on the street. She came across any number of folks like that. And when you're talking about the mentally ill, as we talked about before, that always continues to be a problem as well. And she talked to any number of folks that are actually banned from any number of public places because of their conduct. In fact, she didn't have to walk far down the street in order to come across an individual that came right up into her face and started cursing her and saying all kinds of stuff. And it just so happens that two male tourists from Greece who had just landed in San Francisco that same day said openly, we don't have so many problems like this in Greece. Let's go to Linda on line two. What say you, Linda?
Yes, thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yes. Some of the people, of course, are mentally ill, but because in New Orleans you can drink all day and all night and we don't have liquor license where the bar is closed at 2, which I don't want them to do that. But in the cities that these people have come from, they can't drink after 2 o'clock in barrooms. You know, there are so many reasons, and I know that there are people who are mentally ill. And my suggestion is that they open a place, you know, new. Like you say, you don't want it in Jefferson Parish. Of course, I don't want it in New Orleans either. But they need to open a place where there are police for security, not just a rent-a-cop, but real police for security and doctors available. You know, if they think of a place where they can put some people, like 40 people on the floor and 40 people on the other floor, and clean them up and show them how to live. But there are many people are mentally ill, but they do, I feel that they can do that if they would put nurses or doctors on some floors, you know, like a little clinic style place, because right now they can receive their checks via general delivery. They don't really have to have a home, but they're supposed to receive these checks that they're receiving.
Yep, that's true.
You know, so they're having money, you know, they're getting the money and they're comfortable like this, but the law needs to do something about it because it's nasty.
Do you drop down
off the interstate and see that?
Linda, do you get the feeling that this problem is getting worse?
Oh, yes. I see it every day. Yeah, it's getting worse.
I see it in areas that I haven't seen it before, and I happen to drive through that area, and now I'm seeing it. And it raises concern for me, and these early signs. And just as you pointed out, you know, they referred to what you said, not in the East, and I said, I'm sure Jefferson Parish doesn't want to have that location. It's called NIMBY, not in my backyard, right? And everybody feels that same way, and I understand exactly. But that's why I'm more concerned. Because I'm not seeing an aggressive stance in dealing with this. And quite frankly, I don't like getting on the interstate down there and having somebody defecate right in front of me as I sit at the red light. It's just not something that I find appealing. Now, I may be a prune that way. I don't know. You know, but it's so just...
Are you still there?
Yes,
can
ma'am.
Can you still hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
So I'm saying that there really needs to be something or someone who can address it, because I would love to come up with some ideas, but I don't want to touch anyone, so I won't be the one.
Right.
And the people really need help, mentally and otherwise. And physically, they don't want to be clean.
No, it's
dissatisfied. Something needs to be done. A law needs to be where you can't talk here, you cannot talk here, you can't hear, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's this culture of noncompliance that I talk about. You have got to, it's not just homeless, everybody, even the law-abiding folks, for the most part, the law-abiding folks, you cannot let them engage in activities and not get the appropriate permits, not do what's right, not exploit public property for their own personal good and personal well-being. And you got to stay on these issues day in and day out, or otherwise it's going to permeate throughout the city. And it's what I've been saying all along, and that's why I cover these issues, because these folks obviously took a different path, and look at what the outcome has been for them. Linda, thanks so much.
I just have one more thing to
say. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I don't want them to be hungry. I want people to help them when they can. But I feel that when they are feeding them, what goes in must come out. I mean, that's just disgusting. You have to do something else.
No,
you know, because if you're feeding them, the stuff is going to come out.
I'm not an advocate for inflicting additional pain on them either. I just think that we have to find some remedial solutions that are real, that are practical, that are operational, make sense, and that lead to more positive outcomes. Because what they've done in California, and in particular in San Francisco, they're not reaching positive outcomes. And they've yet to be able to provide data that says that they are. Linda, thank you so much for the call. Got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. So when did they have success? Actually, in 2016, the voters defied the Coalition on Homelessness and approved Proposition Q, which allowed sanitation workers to clear encampments after a 24-hour notice and offer shelter. For the most part, it was unused. The leadership just doesn't have the political wherewithal to do this. But they had an interim supervisor named as mayor in January 2018, and he started applying it. And he said, you can offer services, you can offer shelter and housing to people, and at a certain point, as a city, we need to draw the line and say, this is a service-resistant population. We need to take down those tent encampments because they are unhealthy for the entire city of San Francisco. And they had success, and then immediately after that, London Breed was installed as the mayor there, not an interim, and went back to, as Heather McDonald pointed out, limbo status. They didn't enforce it. They got the rule, but they're not enforcing it. One of the other things that they noticed is that they started to get homeless encampments around their transportation centers, the BART. But when they started posting more officers inside these transit stations to deter those that were jumping the turnstiles in the subway system, they noticed that their revenue went back up. Ticket sales rose 10%, police calls fell 50%, and 30% more riders put value on their existing cars, belying the claim that beleaguered 10 turnstile jumpers are simply just too poor. We're talking around the issue. We've changed our nomenclature. That is not the approach that one should take. Want to win a cool grand and a free cash giveaway contest? Now's your chance. The code word this hour is TANGO. Text TANGO to 72881. That's 72881. Listen for the next code word right before the top of the hour, every hour now through 4 p.m. Don't miss your chance to win $1,000. Good luck from all of us at WWL. We never charge for text, but individual plan text and data rates apply. Please don't text and drive. Scoot's up next. Got a great show. Stay tuned.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.